We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into a Wednesday morning edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Pod. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz here with you. We will be recapping all three of our game twos on Tuesday night. Timberwolves, Suns, Bucks, Pacers, Mavs, Clippers. We'll get into the two game twos coming our way on Wednesday night. Miami and Boston. Heat are 15-point underdogs tonight. New Orleans, OKC as well. But first and foremost, we have to, you know, take care of some business from our presenting sponsor, Prize Picks, which is the best way to get in on action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Prize Picks is so simple to play. I can make my picks, submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. All you do is just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Brandon, you've been using Prize Picks every single day throughout this NBA regular season. You've been putting some video content up on the site. You can find Brandon's leans each day, Monday through Friday, on the RotoWire Twitter account. What are we looking at tonight?
I'm liking Jaime Jaquez. Now, I know that this game is kind of scary as far as the prop world goes, but Jaime Jaquez for more than 14.5 points, this is something he's done in each of his last four games, and that's not a good enough reason alone, because if you just blindly take a guy for more than whatever the number is because it's something they've done in the past, you can get caught. But there's a through line for why this is happening. When Jimmy Butler is out, Jaime Jaquez has a tendency to step up and become one of their go-to scorers, so 14.5 should be doable. Also, Jason Tatum for more than 2.5 made threes. He shot 8 attempts in game one, only made one of them. So this is sort of the inverse of what I was just talking about. This is the bounce back. Jason Tatum should be able to knock him down. He'll keep shooting him. And if you like the Celtics in a blowout, just think of how it gets there. Most likely Jason Tatum threes is what gets them started.
All right. There we have it. Those are the plays for tonight. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Go download the Prize Picks app today and use our code ROTOPOD, ROTOPOD. That'll give you a first deposit match up to $100. Again, that code is ROTOPOD, ROTOPOD, for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prize Picks. Download the app. You can go check it out on your browser as well. Just make sure you use that promo code, free money. All right, Brandon, let's get into what we saw last night. And our pal Christian's in the chat. He says, good morning, fellas. I can't believe the Suns aren't playing better than this. SMH, which I believe is a popular acronym that stands for shaking my head, presumably in disgust. And I agree, man. You know, I feel like I kind of got suckered in on this Phoenix Suns team. It's like they opened as favorites before game one to win the series. You're like, man, it feels a little disrespectful to Minnesota, but yeah, the Suns have played them well this season. They have more talent. I mean, this is twice now. This one wasn't as ugly as game one, where Phoenix lost by 25, but Minnesota ran away with this game. There's a 13-0 run in the second half, completely took control. Phoenix was able to put a little lipstick on the pig, if you will, and get this deficit down to 12. But I mean, this was a game where Bol Bol was out there. David Roddy was out there. Nas Little was out there at the end of the game. It was not close.
Yeah. I don't know if you and I have talked about this yet, but the philosophy of betting series versus betting games, like there are some, especially in round one, where I'll just bet the series and convince myself night after night to not touch the game. And there are others that I look at and say, I'm going to have to get a feel for that night tonight. The Timberwolves and the Suns were one of those. And the weird thing for me, and I agree with Christian because we talked about this. I thought it was a tough draw for Minnesota.
Yeah,
I thought it was that was a really tough draw for round one. And I liked Phoenix to move on verbally, not to the point where I placed my money on it, because this was one of those series that for me, I said, I'm going to bet this game to game. And you learn a lot about yourself betting sports, because I can say Phoenix is the better team, and this is a tough draw for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I've been on Minnesota for the first two games, so there's obviously something there in terms of the way that I view Minnesota at home in this series. So if so far I have felt like I've had a pretty good read for this, this series has not started yet. Now, this is an overused phrase. The series doesn't start until the road team wins a game. But this might be one of those series where we actually see that play out. I don't like the way Phoenix is playing either. But Minnesota, I think, is one of those teams that's a different squad when they're at home. So I'm not going to totally overreact to this. The warts that we're seeing with Phoenix right now are what we've seen all year long. You can't be surprised with what you've seen. It's ISO ball left and right. They don't have a true point guard. And they kind of get stuck in the mud offensively when the other team's running downhill. So, I it's hard not to react to down 0-2, but I actually think Phoenix is still okay in this series. Not to the point, I'm not betting on it. I'm just saying I'm not saying they're dead yet. That's my point.
The odds makers are agreeing with you. They're plus 330 to win the series, which is not as severe as some other teams that are down 0-2. Lakers, for example, 7-1. Magic are closer to 5-1. The Pelicans are down only 1-0 and lost by 2 in game one. They're 7-1 to beat OKC. So
that just sounds like Zion love to me.
Yeah,
if he's not going to play, then the odds makers, yeah, you know, they don't see any path.
Yeah, I do think, you know, it's easy to watch these first two games. You know, you're waiting for the playoffs, and then you kind of overanalyze what you see in the first two and say, all right, you know, series is over. That should be it. I think last year, right, the Suns were down 0-2, you know, and ended up rallying back against Denver to make that one a series. I would not be surprised. I think they take at least one in Phoenix, but Minnesota, what they're able to do defensively in these first two games has been extremely impressive, right? I mean, Kevin Durant had a nice game in game one. He was not good last night. You know, Booker had to take a ton of tough shots, especially late in this game. He goes 1 of 6 from three. Bradley Beal just kind of running around out there, 14 points on 17 shots in 42 minutes. And we know that the Suns have really nobody reliable on this bench, right? And Eric Gordon gave them actually pretty great minutes in game two compared to game one when he was 0 for 3 of 5 from three for him. That's about what you can expect. Kind of a best case scenario. Drew Eubanks actually looked okay when he was out there. Nurkic got in a little bit of foul trouble, but they absolutely need all three in this series of Durant, Booker, and Beal, maybe not to play at an elite level, but you got to at least have like above average games from two of those three, if not three of those three, to beat this Minnesota team. And that has not happened quite yet. Meanwhile, I think what would worry me if I'm Phoenix is, okay, game one, Anthony Edwards went off, right? You know, the crowd's there, Minnesota, you know, they were obviously jazzed up for that game, started to ride the crowd, which I didn't think was a guarantee by any means, by the way. I kind of thought Minnesota could go either way as far as the nerves in game one. I was wrong there. Anthony Edwards went 3 of 12 from the field last night. You know, he had 15 points on 12 shots. He did get to the line 8 times. He did have 8 assists. That's great. But, you know, he didn't play all that well. Karl Anthony Towns didn't play all that well. He was in foul trouble. Jaden McDaniels ends up being the leading scorer in this game with 25 points on 17 shots. Also played great defense on Kevin Durant. So I think to drop a game handily, if you're Phoenix, where, you know, you outshot Minnesota, they shot 28% from the 3-point line. Anthony Edwards was 3 of 12. That's a little concerning.
That is probably the most concerning part, is that Minnesota was able to run away with this game and their best player wasn't even close to the best version of himself. I just think a lot of this has to do with, it looks worse than it actually is for Phoenix. And I watched that game last night too. I mean, it was not pretty, but that was a Phoenix controlled game for two quarters. Minnesota started to claw back at the end of the second quarter, and then they did what good home teams do throughout the season. Come out in the third, They've got more energy, especially in the playoffs where fans are already in their seats because they're actually there to watch the basketball game. And they feed off of that energy. They went on a run. And Phoenix does not play a collective, cohesive brand of basketball. They're not a great defensive team. So asking them to then create stops when Minnesota has found a bit of life, it was just sort of spiraled. The Suns shot 38% in the third quarter alone last night, only made two threes. That they've got to be the better offensive team in this series. It's the only way they're going to win it. But they've got the pieces in order to do that. They don't have a good bench. That's been the case all year. Lucky for them, they're in the playoffs now. And look across the box scores in the NBA. Benches matter less right now than they've mattered all year long. I'm not seeing good bench play pretty much anywhere in the league. So those starters, just the stars have to be stars, and they got to get the hell out of Minnesota. I'm guessing they even up the series after two games in Phoenix.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
What do you think the line is for game three?
Are you looking at it? I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah,
I'm going to say Suns minus 3.5.
Suns minus 4 at DraftKings. There we have it. All right.
The Oracle, Brandon Kravitz
has struck. Minus 180 on the money line are the Phoenix Suns. So I think there's still a decent amount of belief that they're able to claw their way back into this series. Speaking of clawing their way, Brandon, the Indiana Pacers taking it to the Milwaukee Bucks, especially in the second half last night. 125-108 is the final. This was a closer game than that until Miles Turner just kind of went on like a personal 8-0 run to essentially put this game away midway through the fourth quarter. Not the greatest effort from Milwaukee. Obviously came out and it kind of blitzed Indiana in game one. The Pacers could not hit a three-pointer early in that game, fell into a hole. They were 8 of 38 from three in game one. We talked a lot on the pod on Monday and Tuesday about expecting Indiana to put together a better offensive game. And that was the case, man. I mean, this was this was as about as well as this team could have played, I think, in this situation. They did start a bit cold from three, but ended up going 16 of 36 from beyond the arc. He had four starters with at least three three-pointers made. Siakam has the two highest scoring games of the playoffs so far with 36 and 37 points. Aaron Nesmith gave you three threes. Miles Turner had another big game after being really inefficient in game one. Andrew Nembhard was arguably like the second or third best player in this game. And Damian Lillard kind of buoyed Milwaukee in the first half, but as we saw in game one, was not able to carry that over into the second half. And I don't think you're panicking if you're Milwaukee. We saw Giannis sitting on the bench and still kind of this ominous, like, all right, is he coming back for game three? We don't know. We probably won't get definitive word on that until Friday. Bucks right now are 4.5-point dogs for game three. So a lot could change over the next 48 hours. But to me, that would imply that perhaps the expectation, at least as of right now, is that Giannis is not out there.
What we've seen from Milwaukee is an unconscious first half in that first game. The Pacers have been the better team in this series since. Mm-hmm. They really have. And they created too big of a hole for themselves on the road to come back in that first game. The Bucks right now are the Portland Trailblazers. Damian Lillard all of a sudden looks comfortable. He's putting up big numbers. They even won a game. Points in the paint, they were in the 30s. That's not Milwaukee. And the other guys are just sort of watching Dame play right now. And Dame looks amazing. This is obviously how he's more comfortable. They're not defending as well. Look at Indiana's total. And look at who's ripping them apart. Pascal Siakam, they don't have an answer for that. Giannis is the obvious answer for it. Right. But if he's not out there, this is Portland East right now with Dame, and they'll win a couple of games in the series. But if Giannis doesn't come back, I would be in panic mode after losing that game the way that they did, because it sets up to be such an Indiana series at this point.
Bucks are still favored to win the series, -125, Indiana +105. You're right. I think it completely hinges on Giannis. I don't know that he has to come back for game three, but if the Bucks drop that game, then it feels like he kind of has to be back for game four. The schedule is not necessarily in their favor. Game four would be on Sunday. So you're only getting one day between those. I think last night Milwaukee had a chance still to, I won't even say steal this game. I mean, it was basically back and forth. It was within 5 to 8 points for most of the first three quarters. I thought the Milwaukee bench was horrific, and that extends to the role players as well. I mean, Chris Middleton, I thought, played pretty well. The final line doesn't look all that impressive, but hit a lot of tough shots, kept Milwaukee in the game, especially when Damian Lillard was on the bench. Brooke Lopez, I think the scoring numbers look better than how effective he truly was. I actually thought he struggled defensively, was not really making an impact at the rim. There were two or three drives where Lopez, it felt like 9 times out of 10 during the regular season, just like swats the hell out of that shot. And like Andrew Nembhard finished over him. TJ McConnell had a finish on him. I thought he was just kind of a one step slow on the defensive end. It did a lot of his damage early on from beyond the arc, but this was like a D-minus Bobby Portis game, who missed two layups, missed a dunk, had no touch around the rim. I mean, 6 of 16 from the field. It felt a lot worse than that. I can attest the Bucks fan emergency FaceTime that I had to jump on during the third quarter was basically, all right, Bobby Portis is terrible. We need to bench Patrick Beverley, who was a -27 in 34 minutes. And Jay Crowder, my goodness. Jay Crowder should not be seeing the floor in this series. They were playing multiple times in this game. Patrick Beverley and Jay Crowder were on the floor together. That cannot happen. The way this Bucks team is built. And by the way, Malik Beasley got benched. He was bad early in this game, had a couple defensive lapses, airballed a three, and then was just out for two straight quarters. That meant that we saw way too much Crowder. We saw way too much Patrick Beverley. Not that I love Malik Beasley, but he's got to be out there, man. There are so many lineups with Milwaukee right now where you have two or three guys that the defense is just not concerned about whatsoever. And like you mentioned, their biggest issue has been defending Pascal Siakam. You can live with Miles Turner splashing 19 footers. He went 5 of 17 in game one. More often than not, that's just something that you're going to live with on the defensive end. Siakam's basket, for the most part, easy, right? I mean, how many times did it feel like he had somehow Damian Lillard just like pinned on his back in the post with no help in sight? Milwaukee just doesn't have a guy who physically matches up well with Siakam. Obviously it's not Damian Lillard. And if you get that switch, it's going to be curtains, but at this point in his career, Jay Crowder, I think on paper would be that guy, not capable of that anymore. Maybe that's where they need Giannis more than anything is just, you know, on the defensive end to check Siakam.
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's where that's where they're struggling the most. Right now, their offense is buoyed by them having one of the best shooters on the planet playing at his absolute best. Their offense is not the issue. And in these playoffs, we see the way that the refs are blowing these whistles or not. Scoring just over 100 sometimes is enough. If you play solid defensively, Giannis is the answer. And if he doesn't play, they got problems.
Well, yeah, they're scoring okay, but how many tough shots is Milwaukee relying on, right? And this was the case of game one, too. It's like, yeah, I guess Lillard, that's kind of what he does. He hits tough shots, but
right.
Almost every single one of Middleton's baskets last night was, you know, contested, jab step, you know, hand in the face, pull up. It's like, I don't really know how sustainable that is. And meanwhile, you know, you look at a Pacers team that had 38 assists on 50 field goals, right? I mean, they were generating open looks. They were generating, you know, it felt like running an offense as opposed to Milwaukee kind of doing a my turn, your turn.
Yeah, I mean, look at the numbers. Tyrese Halliburton has not shot the ball well in this series, but 12 assists for him. Pascal Siakam, the scoring load was on his shoulders, still finished with 6 assists. So 18 between those two guys are going to be your primary ball handlers. That's dangerous. And now you take that, and that was on the road. This team, like many, much better when they're at home, and they play at a much quicker pace when they're in Indiana.
Yep.
They're going to end up running up the score if Giannis doesn't play, and maybe even if he does, because, you know, he's still only one guy. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee's going to have to find life on offense from other guys, and asking Bobby Portis to do that, asking Chris Middleton to kind of turn back the clock. These are tough asks. I worry about Milwaukee at this point. I'm more concerned about Milwaukee at 1-1 than I am about Phoenix at 0-2.
Rightfully so. I think this was huge momentum-wise for Indy to not go back to Indianapolis down 0-2. And I don't think the series would have been completely over. But I think if Milwaukee wins last night, you buy Giannis at least a couple more days. You don't feel like he has to be back for game three. Whereas now I think that pressure is starting to mount, right? It's starting to feel like last year against Miami where you're like, all right, how many times can we really get away with this? And you know, when you start to look into some of the betting stuff, you're right. Indy's been great at home. They've been one of the best cover teams at home this season. They are second only to Atlanta in terms of over percentage at home. 61% of their home games this season have gone over. And keep in mind that for half of the season, these totals were at like, you know, 247 for some of these Pacers home games. 25-16 to the over at home are the Pacers this season. Again, they are 4.5-point favorites for game three. Totals at 224, Brandon. I think I like the over.
It's hard for me to like any over at this point with the way there's 4 2 days ago, 3 last night. Mm-hmm. The under over the last 2 days of basketball is 6-1. This is just this playoff style of basketball. And we saw this towards the end of the regular season too. These unders are cashing like crazy. So it's hard for me, unless it's a really low total where it's just hard for an NBA game to be at that point. And we'll talk about one of those games in a minute. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for me to say over on any game that's in the 220s.
Well, the only game that has gone over this number so far is last night's Pacers-Bucks game. So,
if anybody's going to do it, it's this game. I agree with that. It's just hard for me to say the words "I like the over" with everything that we're seeing in the playoffs.
Well, and by everything we're seeing, I assume you mean they're just not calling anything at the rim in any game. I mean, it's astonishing to watch.
We're seeing guys get
January. It's unreal.
I mean, LeBron talked about it in the post game. He's getting ripped for it because anytime LeBron complains, there's a cavalcade of people that can't wait to take him down. But D'Angelo Russell got smacked in the face 2 nights ago. The refs are like, yeah, I don't know. I didn't really see it. They reviewed it and didn't see it. He got smacked in the forehead. In the regular season, the middle of the regular season, the touch fouls that these refs call drive me absolutely crazy. And then you get to the playoffs, and these guys are basically in boxing matches, and they don't call it. There's no consistency. And I want there to be like a middle ground there, because I don't really like either one. It should be a foul if you get smacked in the head. It shouldn't be a foul if a guy's on takes a jump shot and the defender places his hand ever so gently on his hip. That's not a foul to me. A foul actually impacts a shot. It's not just hand placement. So I would like to see some sort of middle ground. And look, the referees, they have a very hard job. I'm not trying to criticize them. I just want there to be a consensus here. It feels like every crew decides what their own set of rules are in the NBA.
I agree, but it does feel more universal across the board now that we're just not seeing calls that you're conditioned as a fan to expect, right? You know, where a guy goes into the lane and, you know, you see the head go back and, you know, they kind of give up on the play. And for the most part in the regular season, we saw that called, whether it was right or wrong. But it does feel like the NBA has shifted from early in the season. It was, all right, players get the benefit of the doubt in that situation. If they're lurching around, yeah, we're going to call it. And if, you know, if the other team wants to challenge, then so be it. It feels like it's now gone the other way where they're like, no, the defense is now getting the benefit of the doubt. I mean, how many times it basically, if a player goes in with multiple defenders at the rim, it has to be an obvious foul or nothing is getting called. I mean, and it wasn't just the Lakers game the other night. It feels like it's been across the board. I think, you know, Nick Sixers had a couple of those. Obviously, the NBA came out and said, yeah, Tyrese Maxey was fouled not once, but twice by Jalen Brunson on that final crazy play. But yeah, it's an adjustment process for players, right? And I do think this is what the league ultimately wants, right? You think of where we were, what we were talking about on this show in January of, all right, Hawks Pacers, this game is going to be like 158 to 153. I mean, games aren't even touching that right now. And I think it's a better product, right? There's four or five times a game where you're like, wow, yeah, that definitely felt like a foul. But it does feel like the combination of ramping up in intensity, which you get in the playoffs by default, and this mandate that they're letting guys play and letting guys be a little bit more handsy on the defensive end. I think it's kind of fostered a more competitive brand of basketball.
I completely agree. Just call it like that all year then. Just right. Keep it. I think that's my biggest complaint. I don't like to over-criticize officials because these guys are humans. They're going to make mistakes. Like if we allow Steph Curry to miss free throws from time to time, we should allow referees to miss calls. And not everybody's perfect, even the best. But I would like there to be consistency over the course of the season. That would be my biggest complaint. What you're seeing now is not what you were seeing in game 50 of the regular season that I would like to see change. But I agree with you. I like this. This product to me is more enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be very interested to see, you know, 2 weeks into next season, is this how it is? Or are we back to, you know, 135 to 130 games every night? I would hope it would be the former. Mavs Clippers, speaking of low scoring games, 96-93 was our final last night. And, you know, that was with kind of a blitz of scoring toward the end. I mean, I didn't even know if either team was going to get to 90 early in the fourth quarter. I mean, by the end of the third, the total score in this game was 66-65, which, you know, for the way the Dallas Mavericks have played offensively, another extremely low scoring game for them. It wasn't necessarily pretty. It looked in many ways a lot like game one, I thought, for Dallas. They didn't have the disaster second quarter where they basically took themselves out of the game. But Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving had to do pretty much everything. You know, they got a slightly better effort from PJ Washington, who had a couple of big threes late, but didn't get really anything out of the bench. You know, Maxi Kleber continues to play big minutes. They only played Daniel Gafford 9 minutes, which I thought was interesting. Derek Lively saw 21 off the bench and, you know, survived another pretty good effort from Paul George and James Harden, although the shooting not there tonight for Harden in the way that it was in game one. Obviously, the big story on the Clippers side, Kawhi Leonard back, played 35 minutes, 7 of 17 from the field, looked good defensively, but did not feel like a vintage Kawhi Leonard game by any means. I think you have to be a little concerned with how he looked.
Very much so, and I thought the offense flowed not nearly as well as it did in that first game, and it's probably because they were deferring to a guy that was rusty, and it kind of felt like that throughout the course of the game. It was, and James Harden was only 6 points off of his total from game one, but he just felt so fluid and in motion with everything in that first game. And there's a deferral. This is part of the reason why, I'm not inventing this opinion, but when you get a high usage player that's coming back after missing some time, there tends to be a little bit of a hitch in the way that that guy is reacclimated to the game, even though they're great players. You see Kawhi out there on the floor with you, whether it's me or you or James Harden, you're going to look at that guy and go, yeah, I'm going to give him the ball. And he was not a good version of himself last night. That played perfectly into Dallas's hands. I didn't think Dallas needed to win that game, but man, do I feel I at Dallas before the series, and I kind of went into last night's game going, if they don't win this game, I am not going to feel good. I'm not going to come off of the prediction, but man, I'm going to be feel pretty gross about it. So last night was a big, you know, wipe the sweat from the brow kind of a game. That's the way the Mavs need to play. They run through Luka, and Kyrie Irving is sort of a he's like a supplement to Luka's game, not a co-star. And I thought that in game one they played like co-stars. Kyrie Irving is like a supercharged role player. When he's at his best, that's the way that he plays. It's Luka and then everybody else. He's got to be Robin, not co-Superman.
Yeah, Kyrie hit a huge three down the stretch to extend the lead for Dallas. Five of the Mavs' last six field goals before the game turned into like fouling and whatnot at the end were three-pointers, which it worked out. You know, Kleba hit one, Washington hit one, Luka hit a couple of, you know, big-time step-backs, including the one that ended up being the dagger. Although the Mavs committed like 2-1 fouls when they were, you know, when they were just basically trying to run out the clock, that actually kept the Clippers in this and made it somewhat of a game when it should have been over. The level of difficulty on those shots for Luka Doncic, it's fine. It didn't really feel like it was coming in the flow of the offense. You know, it's like, all right, well, there's 4 seconds on the clock. I'm just going to step back and whip this thing up from 28 feet. And because it's Luka, it went in, but it didn't necessarily feel like something that was overly sustainable. It was fun to watch Luka and Harden guard each other, by the way, which is kind of the Spider-Man meme in some ways, where it's like both guys know exactly what the other's going to do and they were powerless to stop it. But you know, I think you're right on the overall point with Dallas. Like, they essentially had to win this game. They're now back to being favored for the series, -135. To me, this entire series comes down to, does Kawhi look like Kawhi? If he doesn't, I think Dallas wins in 6 or 7. If he does, then maybe I would flip and take the Clippers in 6 or 7.
Yeah, that Clippers performance in game one shook me a little bit because it was like everything they did just went well for them. And then you see, this is the ebbs and flows of the series. Now, all of a sudden, all the production from Russell Westbrook and James Harden playing like a perfect basketball player, which he has been known to do in the playoffs. I know the guy gets a lot of flack because he doesn't finish the job, but he starts the job really well in the postseason. That was great the starter. Best. He's a great, phenomenal starter in the playoffs. Mm. By the way, last night, Dallas did something that they hadn't done all year. They won a game without scoring 100 points. They were 0-8 in the season when they score less than 100 until last night.
And I think if you're Dallas, that makes you maybe a little more encouraged because you're telling yourself, look, we didn't play that well. You know, defensively we showed up. I think what would concern me the rest of the series is I don't even think you need a third option per se, but you got to identify two or three guys who are either role players in that starting lineup or coming off the bench who you can rely on, right? Because, you know, for the Clippers, I think, I wouldn't say they got lucky, but, you know, Russell Westbrook and Norm Powell going 4 of 19 from the field, I think was a big reason Dallas won this game. And, you know, Russ played pretty well in game one. Powell played well in game one. That'll probably come back around as the series goes on. But, like, who are those two guys for Dallas? Who are those two guys that are going to swing the series? Like, is it Maxi Kleba? Do you really feel good about that? You know, Derek Lively, you're bringing him off the bench. He's really just an energy rebounder guy, you know, not going to take any shots outside of 3 feet. You know, Dante Exum, Tim Hardaway, they've almost been phased out of the rotation. Both of those guys played just 6 minutes last night. Saw a lot of Derek Jones, who's ultimately a defender guy and, you know, doesn't do a whole lot offensively. So you could win series with Kyrie and Luka doing 90% of the work on offense. I don't know how far that ultimately takes you, though, as we get deeper into the playoffs. With that said, if it's OKC looming in round two, I still really love that matchup for Dallas or for the Clippers, honestly.
Yeah, you're right. They've got to find somebody else and it's somebody that just hits knockdown threes. And
I guess it's PJ Washington maybe, but that doesn't feel like enough.
No, and you know, he's got other things that he's got to do in this series too. He's probably going to be their best or second best rebounder, and he's arguably their best defender. So like that, he's got other roles that he can play where if he's not knocking down threes, he can still impact the game. Tim Hardaway Jr., just looking at his game log, he has not been effective recently, but he kind of needs to be that guy. Stand in the corner, knock down those threes. You let Kyrie and Luka create the space and you just stand there and hit those knockdown jumpers It feels like the Mavs have always had that guy, and sometimes Tim Hardaway Jr. has been that guy. It's 0 points in last night's game, 6 in the game prior. I don't know what's going on there, but this is a guy who used to be able to shoot the three and at times in the year has been pretty effective in that. If they can get back to that, then they'll be in a pretty good spot.
All right, we've been delaying this for way too long. Let's talk Orlando Magic. It's kind of comical to
you
me.
You can feel the numbers going up in this podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure you listen to a lot of pods and do a lot of reading and whatnot this time of year. There's just been a collective, like, we don't want to talk about this from basically everybody who covers the NBA. And I feel bad because I got suckered in. I was kind of excited for this series. I thought it would be closer. I didn't think Orlando would be like, what are they, like 5 for 500, I think, on open threes through the first two games.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what NBA.com/stats had. Alex was sending me stuff yesterday. I don't know what he was doing. He's got a lot of free time this time of year. And he said there were calls to bring up Mac McClung from the G League game three. He said the Magic fans had started a witch hunt and found the shooting coach's LinkedIn page and were like vandalizing it and trying to get him fired. He said fans were shaming other fans for not buying enough tickets to game three. What is going on here? They're only down 0-2. The series isn't over. And yet Magic fans are just in a state of upheaval.
Tell me about it. I ranted on them yesterday. That was how I spent about 50% of my show in Orlando was how exactly did that. This is what drives me crazy. This fan base. Okay, so we all knew the Vooch, Aaron Gordon, Evan Fournier years. Yeah, they got to the playoffs. It was as an 8 seed. You knew they weren't going anywhere. So I'm going to eliminate that from the memory of a Magic fan. You've been waiting to be excited about the playoffs for like 15 years as a Magic fan. They've been in the playoffs on game days for 2 days, and Magic fans are already trying to figure out how they can get the coach fired, who's the nominee for coach of the year. They're already trying to figure out who they're moving off of in the offseason and what available free agents can fix this problem, while also taking down the front office for not making moves at the deadline to correct the issues that you're seeing in this series. It's 2 games. And yes, they look terrible. I am not making excuses for the Magic. I just wish that fans, and if you're not a fan of the Magic and you're a fan of somebody else, this applies to you too. When your team is in the playoffs, that's not the time to start yelling at whoever you feel like you need to yell at about off-season moves. This is not the time for it. Live in the moment. Hurt with the losses. Celebrate the wins. But you, as a fan, wait all year for the playoffs, and then you give up on it after 2 games. It's lunacy. That's just no way to live. Just let I'm trying to life coach people out there. That is not healthy behavior. But the Magic do look terrible.
Yeah. With all that said, those people are correct. The Magic are horrible.
The assessment isn't wrong. The attitude is wrong. That's what I'm getting at.
Is it oversimplifying it to just say it's really come down to the shooting? You know, because I think the path for the Magic winning this series was, you know, show up defensively, hold the Cavs under 100 points. They've accomplished that. They've held them to 97 and 96 over these first two games. The problem is they've scored 83 and 86. But does it really come down to that, you know, where you're just asking like, all right, Gary Harris, we need you, man. We're going to need like 7 threes out of you because literally no one else on this team could shoot. I mean, Cole Anthony has yet to have a made field goal in this series, right? Like Jalen Suggs has been, I know he had the injury and that was part of it, but wasn't great in game one either. I think I got to tip my cap to the fans on this one. And you know, you've mentioned this many times. They had an opportunity to add shooting at the deadline and they didn't do it. I mean, it's a team that struggled in that area. It was their glaring weakness throughout the season. They were able to survive it, just kind of leaning on that defense. But yeah, it's been obvious, man. I think the actual number is they're like 11 of 44 on wide open threes for the series.
So the front office clearly, it's not like these guys know basketball. You'd have to be an absolute fool to not see at any point in the season that this team needs shooting. If I can figure that out, the guys that are paid to make these decisions have figured that out. They clearly made the decision at the deadline that we are going to hopefully still get into the playoffs, and then we'll just see what this team does, but we're not going to make any moves so that we can advance around in the playoffs. We're going to see what this crew does. We're going to assess it from there. And then in the next offseason, which I'm not ready to have that conversation, but I'll just make this statement. in the offseason, if they don't address this, then you might have to send the Magic front office into the psych ward. But as of right now, they're just looking at what they've got. This is a team that still is a year ahead of schedule for where this rebuild is supposed to be. So the team's in a good spot. Team's in a good spot even if they get swept. Fans aren't going to like that because it doesn't feel good. As far as the actual series itself, I think it is more than the shooting. The shooting is 85% of the problem. But Evan Mobley and Jared Allen have dominated this series. The Magic, and offensively with rebounds, defensively, the Magic can't really set up the offense that they want. They're limited in that regard anyway. But it all starts with Paolo and Franz getting into the lane and then dishing out or getting buckets themselves. This team is really good. Their record's like 22-4. Don't quote me on that, but it's right around that when Paolo and Franz combine for 50 points. They're at their best when they're both scoring efficiently. And they can't do that when Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are either deterring them from entering the paint altogether or they're actually altering their shot. That seems to be as big of an issue or close to it as the actual shooting. But yeah, because if they were knocking down shots, then this other part that I just brought up wouldn't be an issue. But now it's a confounding problem or compounding problem, however you say that.
I think it's compounding and confounding if you're a Magic fan or a Magic player. All right, we'll do a couple things quick before we get out of here. I don't have much to say about Heat Celtics. I think we know where this is headed. I think game one went about exactly as you'd expect. Celtics 14.5 point favorites tonight with a total of 203.5. So the implication here is Miami might not even break 90. Over under 0.5 losses for the Boston Celtics in this series and next round, whether that's against Orlando or the Cavs. Combined.
That is interesting because it's tough. And it shouldn't be. I'll still take the over at some point through 8+ games. You'd think they'd trip up and have a bad game. So I'll take the over, but that's not an easy bet to make. What would you take?
I think under. I'm getting.
You don't think the Cavs can? This Heat team without Jimmy Butler isn't going to beat them. But you don't think the Cavs could do it once? I think the Cavs could beat them one time.
They could. I don't really have that much faith in the Cavs. I think Orlando's lack of shooting is making the Cavs look better than they are. And, you know, it depends. I mean, you could get a 45-point Donovan Mitchell game, but I also think the Celtics have the personnel to neutralize, you know, Mobley and Jared Allen, great points by you, by the way. Those guys, I think those have been the linchpins. Like, yeah, Mitchell's numbers look good. Mobley, the way he's played, especially defensively on Banchero and Jared Allen, which the Magic are just not starting a center. I get it. Is Cleveland the team to do that against? You know, it's like you're rolling Isaac out there. You're bringing Wendell Carter or Wagner off the bench. And it's like, yeah, there's
a reason. I don't think Jonathan Isaac probably isn't going to start moving forward. I think that experiment is over.
I'm fine with it. I just don't understand why doing it against the Cavs specifically would be the plan. I don't like because that's like the last team. The Cavs or the Timberwolves, like the two teams you don't do that against.
Yes, that's a fair point. Wendell Carter Jr. has also struggled in those matchups. So they're going to – here's the thing. I don't think the Goga – honestly, fans are screaming for Goga right now.
I kind of like Goga.
I don't think there's – this is where I let Jamal Mosley off the hook. I don't think there's a right answer to the problem. I think the Cavs just simply out-personnel the Magic. I thought it was a good matchup going into the series. I was clearly dead wrong on that and probably had homer glasses on when I said that. But – This is a rough matchup. Cleveland learned last year, hey, we have size and we don't have shooting. So what did they do? They added Niang. They added Max Strus. Isaac Okoro got better. They corrected their problems after they got bullied in the playoffs. The Magic are experiencing what the Cavs experienced last year, and they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to correct these problems. But putting Wendell Carter Jr. in for Jonathan Isaac doesn't all of a sudden, boom, series saved. Or Goga. It's the same thing. They're going to have the same problems.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting offseason for Orlando. I still think they're in a really good spot. I think just getting the Banchero piece is the single hardest thing to do when you're a rebuilding team is locking in a clear number one guy. And I've said it before on this pod. I don't think he got enough credit for how good he was this year because this is not a great roster around him. And they won, 47 games?
Yeah. And I would love to see him have that one playoff performance where he puts up 35 and 10 assists and he just just leave the fans of the Magic. And I think more importantly, just the NBA community with this collective. Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah, he's played okay in this series. Too many turnovers, but I want to see a dominant performance from him before the Magic end up flying to Cancun.
Yeah, kind of one of those, and you know, I hate to use this cop, but he does play like him. Like one of those early LeBron Cavs games, like where maybe they don't even win, but LeBron gives you like 44 and a loss.
Yeah, exactly. Early in LeBron's career, he had playoff losses where you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This team sucks.
Like, why is Ira Noble on the court? Exactly. Oh my God, Mo Williams is really bad.
Yes, give me one of those. I think it'll make everybody feel better.
All right. Last thing, and then we'll get out of here. You know, we gotta get on the radio. We gotta talk some NFL draft. I gotta talk some baseball later today. As a seam head myself. Pels Thunder. It very interesting game one. I actually kind of wish the Pelicans had won. As somebody who doesn't care who wins this series, I actually like OKC. I'm not rooting against them, but I think it would have made for a much more fun scenario if OKC had lost that game. I don't think they deserve to win it. I don't know if New Orleans did either. I don't think either team really did. Neither team played well, but I think it would have been really interesting to see OKC, a team that everybody, despite being the one seed, I think has some pretty reasonable skepticism toward, you know, fall into that 0-1 hole. And, you know, the odds makers after OKC won that game, I mean, the series odds dramatically shifted in favor of the Thunder. I'm not convinced that they're in complete control here. I think New Orleans can make this a series. I would pick the Pels to win, and partially because I feel like game one was their chance, right? And much like the Lakers in game two, it's like losing that game almost counts as like a double loss.
Yes. And, you know, I know that with all the other action that we got to, we didn't touch on that, but that Lakers loss felt like the pregame show to a sweep. And I picked them to win that game. That is a back-breaking loss, the way that they lost that game. Dominant in the first half. And then there's nothing you could do to stop them at the end of that game. So that one's tough to rebound from. I think the Pelicans, just a game earlier in the series, are in a similar situation. That was their shot. OKC's not used to this. You know, they were the team that was settling into playoff basketball. And New Orleans had a chance to steal one from them early in this series. Now OKC is settled in. They have a far better roster than New Orleans. I think OKC comes out tonight and lays it on the New Orleans Pelicans. And then we'll have a different public view of this series after an OKC blowout.
Thunder 7.5-point favorites, total 211.5. If you're interested in tailing Brandon on that one. I tend to agree with you. I think OKC, like I said, they survived the game they should have lost. They survived the kind of deer in the headlights performance in game one. I think you can exhale and, you know, kind of remind yourself why you're the one seed after giving yourself that cushion. I still like Dallas or the Clippers in that matchup in round two. I don't see this as a potential finals team quite yet. I think OKC, for as good as they were during the regular season, there's still some pretty obvious holes on this roster. And you know, I thought their usage of Josh Giddey in game one was interesting as well. Like, basically didn't play down the stretch at all. He checked out with about 10 minutes left. They rolled with, you know, they kind of went offense defense with Isaiah Joe and Kayson Wallace, who was out there for that final possession on McCollum. Not that, you know, one singular playoff game is an indictment on Giddey, but, you know, I don't, in a playoff environment when you're tightening your rotation, although the Thunder did use 11 guys in game one, like, what is he bringing you that no one else on this roster does? So it's like SGA is a better scorer and playmaker. Jalen Williams is a better defender and probably equal playmaker at this point. It does feel like if they're going to move one of these pieces or try to improve this roster or leverage something to get a big man who is not Bismack Biyombo, I think Giddey would be the odd man out.
Yeah, I would completely agree. This is the difference between regular season basketball and postseason basketball. And I mentioned it earlier, but I think it's worth repeating. Last night's a good example of this. There wasn't a single bench player in the NBA last night that scored double digits. Benches are not irrelevant in postseason play, but they are far less impactful. And OKC is a team that is built from top to bottom. They're strong all the way through. And it gets you a lot of wins in the regular season, because when other teams break and starters sit on the bench or they're out, you just have this like constant revolving door of good basketball players. In the playoffs, that doesn't matter as much. You need your starting lineup to be the you need that to be as strong as possible. And I think OKC will learn that moving forward, and they'll upgrade. And when they start to upgrade that roster with all of the pieces they have that they can move off of their bench, draft capital, they've got a really scary future ahead of them. But they're another team probably a year ahead of where they should be. Mm-hmm. And I would agree with you. OKC, I think, is the real deal, but they're the real deal with a lot of inexperience. And I think they'll dominate this series, but they'll probably get capped with moving on beyond the next one.
All right, man, we'll wrap it up here. Looking forward to these games tonight. I don't know that it's going to be quite as exciting as the last two nights in the NBA. It's like we've kind of stacked the two series that are maybe like toward the bottom in terms of excitement. Yeah. Although I do think New Orleans OKC is going to be a lot of fun. Maybe not so much if you're a Miami Heat fan going up against Boston tonight. We got the NFL draft tomorrow. Unfortunately, Cavs Magic is going up against the draft. How do you handle this from a viewing perspective? Are you going to be in the arena?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'll have the draft on my laptop. I sit up at midcourt club level. Terrence Ross, by the way, is part of our broadcast team now, which Whoa. Is awesome. Yeah,
no way.
He's been awesome. So cool. Getting his I plan to do that. Keep forgetting to ask, but it's been so cool getting his perspective. And then, you know, you always get like a little bit more when you go to commercial break because the players have a hard time criticizing other players on the air. He just retired. So these are a lot of guys. Like, some of these guys come and hang out at his house.
Played with like half of these guys, right?
He played with a few of them. Yeah. Him and Jonathan Isaac are good buddies. So that's been awesome. And we'll have him there. But draft will be on the laptop. Game will be out in front of me. It'll be the first time since I was a child that I've missed the NFL draft. So,
well, you're not missing it per se, but
not missing it, but like missing being locked in on it.
Yeah. They should put it on the Jumbotron at the Amway Center.
You know, if the score is 27-25 at halftime, I might have to see if I can commission that.
All right, man. Well, looking forward to that. We'll probably talk some NFL draft on this show next week because we'll see where we're at with some of these series, but looking forward to it. We'll have you on the radio show next week as well. You can hear more NBA talk on this podcast tomorrow. Dr. A and Rick Kamla will be back. You can catch me and Alex Buthon on the RotoWire NBA show tomorrow night as well, 7 p.m. Eastern over on NBA Radio. Brandon, good stuff as always, man. Enjoy the game tomorrow night.
All right. See you guys next week.